The Athletic.
Stokely Football League show, the Thursday edition. Derby's double deduction, Reading hit for six, new Barnsley boss Poyas to take charge, and there are two Matt Taylors in League Two, but only one on this podcast. In association with Paddy Power, this is the Stokely Football League show. Welcome along then, listener. It's an MMA theme in the pod today, by which I mean the initials of the people on it. I'm Matt. Michelle Owen's here too. Hi, Michelle.
Hey, Matt.
Adrian Clark's with us as well. How you doing, Clarky?
Hello, yeah, all good.
Looking forward to the return of the Championship. We'll preview some of the games going on later this weekend, later in the pod. First, though, let's talk some news. Derby deducted another 9 points, whilst Reading have been docked six with a further six suspended. We'll talk about Reading later in our previews. But Derby-wise, Michelle, that's their season all but kibosh now, isn't it? They looked as though they were going to make a decent fist of it, but this is surely too much. They're on minus 3 points now, 18 from safety.
Oh, I don't see how you bounce back from this. If you look at the bottom of the table, minus 3 points and the gap to Peterborough, they're on 15. It's just no way back for Derby, surely, from here. If they were to do something, if they were to stay up, I honestly think it would be a bigger miracle than when Leicester won the Premier League. You know, that's how big a miracle Derby County need. I've got no sort of direct connection to the club, but I just feel so bad for their fans because it's completely out of their hands, everything that's happened, you know, with the administrators being appointed, the financial situation. And they've made such a good fist of it on the eve of the season, didn't even have a fully assembled squad. Spent some time with Curtis Davis when he's been doing Sky this season. He's told me all about the young players. And it sounds a really positive place to be, but I cannot begin to imagine what it was like going to training the next day because they know their fate is almost sealed. I want to give them a slim chance, but I can't see it happening. And it's just gutting for them. You know, I'm doing Derby and Bournemouth on Sunday. It's going to be interesting to see what the reaction of the crowd is and things. But Wayne Rooney's spoken brilliantly since then. Credit to him and credit for the job he's done so far.
Clarky, from a player's point of view, I guess there'll be a couple of camps. If you're one of those who thinks, right, come January, I'm likely to be sold. And if not at the end of the season, it's probably easy to get your head around. But if you're somebody in the Derby squad who's not going to attract suitors necessarily and is therefore going to be there for the rest of this season and probably next, how's your mentality this morning? You must be absolutely crushed.
Do you know what? I think it's easier than you think for players to deal with, genuinely. And I feel that most of them will probably be gone within 12 to 24 months anyway, because we know that contracts are pretty short these days. And if you are a saleable asset, you will be sold. So it doesn't affect as many players as you would imagine. And of those that you speak of that maybe wouldn't attract anybody, then you would probably have to say that they're fringe players anyway, and that their place would be more secure next season, albeit at the lower level. So they might become more integral part of that first team environment. The players get their wages no matter what. They're protected as well, aren't they? So for me, it's all about the staff. They will be really, really worried about their jobs. Job security will be a nightmare there. And for the fans, obviously, it's difficult because that everything's out of their hands, as Michelle says. But for the players themselves, they will garner sympathy. And yeah, it's not that easy. But the bottom line is the majority will either be gone or better off next season because of what's happened. And for the remainder of this campaign, the pressure's off. Michelle's talked about it. So it'd be a bigger miracle, or as big a miracle, as Leicester winning the title. In that kind of scenario, you can go out there and enjoy your football and play with a bit more freedom, maybe. So, yeah, I'd say the players are among the least affected.
As ever, then, it kind of falls on the supporters, Michelle. I guess if we wanted to give any Derby fans listening a crumb of comfort, you could look to the case of Wigan. You know, it's not that long ago we were talking about whether they would even survive. And now look at them. They're one of the biggest spending clubs in League One and flying in that division. So depending on who comes in next, and obviously they're very different cases, but it doesn't necessarily have to be the end of the world.
No, I think Adrian's hit the nail on the head. Just, I feel like everything is going to change now. You know, if and when they go to League One, the playing personnel are going to change. I worry for the staff there. That must be horrible, you know, with families to support and that sort of thing. But the infrastructure of the club is probably going to change. And what they'll have on day one of next season is a completely different side to what started this season. But that can be exciting and that can be a new opportunity. I don't see Wayne Rooney being there if they're in League One, to be honest. So a lot, I would imagine, would change. Maybe he'll stick with them, but a lot's going to change. I mean, coming up, they've got Bournemouth and Fulham. So if they were to get two results there, imagine what that would do for morale when it's on the floor at the moment. And then they've got some more favourable fixtures, you'd say, coming up, but some tricky ones as well. I mean, the Championship, you just can't predict anything. But yeah, they're playing the top two next as it stands. And if they were to get anything against them, then I think that would do a lot to boost spirits around the club. But my thoughts, like Adrian, are just with everyone behind the scenes too.
Well, Matt Slater has got a piece over on The Athletic about how every Championship club is, at least to some extent, for sale. Go and have a read of that if you like. Theathletic.com/leagues show is the place to go for a third off the price of a subscription. All right, listeners to the Totally Football Show will know our next guest from that particular podcast. If, like me and Adrian, your favourite outlet for Swedish sports news is Aftonbladet, then you'll know Frida Fagerlund from there too. Frida joins us now to talk about Poya Asbaghi, who is the new Barnsley boss. Frida, thanks for joining us. First of all, have I got his name right there? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, I think that was pretty good. Thank you for having me. I think it's Poya Asbaghi, we usually say. So, but you know, it's Iranian, so I'm not, you know, 100% sure, but I think that's all right.
Right, I'm looking forward to hearing it said in a Barnsley accent, I've got to say. So he's coming in from the Sweden under 21 side, and it's been a very, very successful role for him, as it was in club football with Gothenburg before that.
I do think so. It's always very hard to tell, I feel, with the under 21 national team. But yeah, I mean, his background is fairly unique in comparison to most Swedish football coaches, I guess. Like I said, he was born in Iran, moved to Sweden with his family as a one-year-old, got himself into some trouble with the law as a young adult, but seemed to have gotten on the right path later in life, studied economics at university, and basically became a football coach despite having minimal playing experience himself. And I still remember when he sort of got his breakthrough in Sweden, which was back in 2017. And he was considered as this modern, exciting coach that could potentially revolutionise Swedish football. You know, we don't produce that many world-class football coaches. You know, it's been a while since Sven-Göran Eriksson was at his peak. And funnily enough, when Asbaghi was appointed by IFK Gothenburg back in 2018, Sven's name was mentioned a lot during the press conference, since that was the club where he got his breakthrough as a coach, and many predicted that something similar would happen to Asbaghi. And it started off pretty well. I even think he got nominated as Coach of the Year in Allsvenskan 2019, but 2020 was a complete mess. If I remember correctly, they were winless in 13 games or something like that, very unorganised in the defence, didn't score enough goals. But still some people on the board wanted to keep Asbaghi and didn't feel like he was to blame for the bad results. But yeah, in the end he got sacked, went on to working as a national coach of the Swedish under 21 team, and yeah, here we are.
Did Barnsley seek him out, do you know, or was he actively looking for jobs in England?
I think they seeked him out. If you look at the hierarchy at Barnsley, it's not that strange that he was appointed. You have the CEO, Khalid El Ahmed, who is the former scouting manager at Djurgården, another Swedish club. You have David Wernersson, club secretary. So the Swedish connections are definitely there. Although I think it's a bold move. I mean, this is not an easy task, which surely Asbaghi must understand. And I do think that some people are quite surprised that he left his role with the under 21 national team. It's just such a secure environment to work in. But yeah, I guess this shows that he's very ambitious and that he wants to gain more club experience in a challenging environment.
Frida, the Barnsley chief executive said that he has a clear tactical philosophy. What is that clear tactical philosophy. I'm just thinking that if he was seen as a revolutionary coach potentially in Sweden, that he plays an attractive style of football, because let's be honest, Barnsley's most successful campaign for many, many years under Valerian Ismail was basically all about booming it as far as you could upfield and looking to score from free kicks and corners. What sort of coach is he?
I mean, the first word that comes to mind is probably control. His philosophy is to take control of games through possession. But at the same time, I do feel like he's one of those coaches who is quite flexible. He decides how his teams are going to play and what formation, depending on what players he has at his disposal. But it's very difficult to say how well he's going to do in England. I feel like his assistant coach, Ferenc Sibila, is highly qualified. And I think those two together are a very good team. They know football very well. But this is a completely different culture and a completely different challenge to what they faced previously. But on Sibila, because he's quite interesting, he was appointed as caretaker of IFK Gothenburg when Aschbagi was sacked, which became an odd situation because Sibila and Aschbagi were known as the married couple. They were that close. So I'm not surprised that they are going to be working together again. And like I said, I think they're both highly competent football coaches. It was very difficult to say how well they would do over here in England.
Frida, I was just wondering, you know, if he had such a cushy job with the under-21s in Sweden, he's coming into a team that have lost 7 in a row in the championship. Why? Why does he fancy this challenge? Is it just to have the opportunity in English football?
Yeah, I think so. I can't think of any other explanation. Like I said, I think personally that it's a very bold move. It's just such an... I guess it's... Yeah. It's just such a nice position to have, being the coach of the under-21 national team. And I also think that's usually a pretty good way of becoming, you know, the main national coach eventually. And I do still think that he probably has a very bright future in terms of, you know, potentially becoming the new national coach if he does well. But yeah, this is such a big challenge, and I'm not really sure. I mean, I would love to just speak to him and really understand what made him so attracted to this opportunity. But yeah, I definitely think that he feels that he wants to get some more experience, and what better way to do than to take on this challenge?
Yeah, we'll find out if that was a good idea or not soon enough. Frida, thank you so much for joining us today. That was great.
Thank you.
Frida Fagerlin there. Well, Michelle, it's a left field appointment. And even Frida's kind of admitted as much from both sides. Barnsley do love that kind of thing. I guess in a way, they're less likely to go down because of what's happened elsewhere this week. And they might as well roll the dice. Or should they have gone back to, I don't know, some tried and trusted Neil Warnock type.
Yeah, but they haven't done that of late, have they, at all? So, yeah, it's a bit of a... I don't want to say random, because they've obviously done their research and gone and found him, and he's interested. But, I mean, Marcus Schopp hasn't really worked out. But Valerian Ismail, did many people know who he was? Gerhard Struber did a good job. Before that, there was Daniel Stendel. And also Jose Murray was there, wasn't he? So they don't go for your usual appointments that you might associate with a championship club in trouble. Whether it works or not, I'll be honest, I've got no idea, because I don't know enough about him. But it's another interesting one. I think I'm doing the Barnsley game on Boxing Day, so be a chance to have a look close up, what his tactics are. It sounds, from what Frida said, he sort of goes with who he's got at his disposal rather than a set way of playing. That's the vibe I got. But yeah, if I'm a Barnsley fan, I'm wondering what's next, what are we going to get here?
Another managerial point, Stevenage will not be getting Steve Evans as their head coach. He was speaking to the media on Thursday morning and said the chairman had turned down the request from Stevenage. I have a meeting later today with the chairman, not just to discuss that, but everyone knows my contract's up at the end of the season. He's obviously not happy, Clark. He's got 9 fit senior players at the moment, and the fact that he was considering leaving for Stevenage, who look to all intents and purposes like they're going to spend the season in the bottom of League Two, or certainly there or thereabouts, would tell you that one way or another he's not going to be Gillingham manager much longer.
You wouldn't have thought so. The two big personalities, aren't there, with Scally there as well. It's they're always going to clash, but yeah, it was a really interesting interview the other day that was doing the rounds on the internet about him basically saying that he's not motivated by anyone at the club. You know, you've got to motivate the motivator, was what he said. And yeah, it was clearly a dig, wasn't it, at the hierarchy to give him a reason to stay. And be interesting to see. I wouldn't mind being a fly on the wall at that meeting. I think the Gillingham chairman is going to have to convince, if he wants Steve to stay, he's going to have to convince him that he will get ammunition to go out there and sign new players, better players, moving forwards. Otherwise, Evans' head will be turned next time, even if this one hasn't come off for him.
Another piece of news is that the Football League season will start in July of next year. The Championship will stop during the group stages of the World Cup. Leagues 1 and 2 will carry on where possible. The Championship will continue after the group stages. What a ridiculous idea having a World Cup in Qatar is, I think, is all we need to say about that, really. All right, next, we're going to hear from the Exeter City manager, Matt Taylor.
So, Mr. Ferguson, what's troubling you?
Well, you see, I've started this new personal security company.
Right, and have you got any clients so far?
Well, only one, wee Ollie, but I feel he's going to get taken out soon.
Sometimes there's only so much you can do, but with Paddy Power, you can secure your future with our great offer. Get money back as a free bet if one leg of your bet builder lets you down. Paddy Power!
Pretty much bet builder bets only. Min odds 1 to 5 per leg, min 4 plus legs. Max free bet £10 per day. Excludes enhanced match odds on an exclusive T's and C's supply. 18 plus, begambleaware.org.
You're listening to the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
It's been a magnificent start to the season for Exeter City, riding high in the League Two table, and they thought they'd booked their place in the second round of the FA Cup. A 3-0 win for them against Bradford midweek. The morning after that, we spoke to Matt Taylor. Later on that day, it was revealed that Exeter had made a sixth substitution. Only five were permitted. We wondered if maybe they'd be thrown out of the competition. As it stands, they will have to replay the game instead. And Matt Taylor didn't know that at the time we spoke to him. So here he is on the Grecians' recent greatness and sounding pretty chipper too. Matt, congratulations. We're speaking the morning after the 3-0 win against Bradford in the Cup. Went the distance, which I'm guessing is not ideal, but it also extends this incredible unbeaten run to 19 matches. So I'm guessing you're pretty happy.
Yeah, really happy. Look, I think a few tired bodies this morning. Probably for both sides, it was a hell of a game of football. 90 minutes of an arm wrestle, and then we just got a little bit stronger towards that extra time period, and a little bit of quality showed and dominated the last 30 minutes of the game. But it was nip and tuck up until that point. Bradford are a fantastic team at this level, so we always knew it was going to be a tough test, and we just hope we've come through it relatively well in terms of the bodies, because all our focus now is going towards this weekend.
Today is a recovery day then, presumably, is it?
Yeah, look, the lads playing such a shift last night. That there's a few in the physio room, unfortunately, getting bits and pieces, you know, a bit of recovery processes, which we always go through. But generally, they have the day off because, you know, similar to managers and a lot of players, they probably don't sleep too well when the adrenaline's so high. It was an emotional night, just on the structure and the setup of the game being such a tight affair, and then to have that freedom towards the end. And the fact that it was well attended, despite the attendances in the FA Cup being poor so far this season, we still got a good crowd in there, and they got right behind the boys. So great to see the celebrations at the end. But we quickly put that one in the bag and focus on what's next, and see who's fit and available tomorrow going into the weekend. But you touched upon it there, that the confidence is in a good place at the moment, but that's only on the back of the recent run of form.
Yeah, and I guess Matt Jay kind of epitomises that, maintaining his hot streak with two brilliant goals on Tuesday night. How good is he, and how surprised are you that nobody's come in to try and prize him away from you?
I'm sure they will do. I'm sure that's to come at some stage. Look, MJ had his breakthrough season as such last season. Sounds strange because he scored 20 goals last season and was our player of the season by an absolute mile. But he had to be patient and wait for that opportunity. And it was always a question whether or not he could back it up or if not, improve on that. And he's certainly doing that at the moment. I think he's already on 12 so far this season, captaining the team, leading the team, leading by example. And his finishing is absolutely outstanding for the level of football. For such a diminutive and small player, he doesn't get involved in too much of the play in the middle of the pitch and can often get caught up in the mess, which is League Two football. But if there's ever a player who works well in space and around the 18-yard box, then it's MJ. And you saw his finishes last night, and he's just grown and grown and grown in confidence in relation to finishing. And he's scoring different types of goals as well. Not just the 6-yard box, the poacher's goals. He's hit it from the outside of the box. He even scored a back post header a couple of weeks ago. So he's adding a bigger range of goals to his tally.
And do you think that front three of him, Nombe and Brown might be the difference for you this year and get you over the line in terms of promotion?
But we've got to keep him fit, first and foremost. We've got to keep him at the club. You just touched upon it there. I'm sure there's going to be interest in not just MJ, but various players at the football club. So keep him fit, keep him available, keep him fresh, keep him in form. Obviously, Sam's had a good run of form. MJ's been on good form. Giovanni got his first goal at the weekend. I think Giovanni's got the most assists outside the Premier League and Championship, which shows they're all contributing. But they're three important players amongst others. So we've got a real strong system and setup. And I think one thing which is probably not being documented too much is that our flexibility throughout this run has been in formation, in personnel, the strength of the squad. But our principles of play haven't really changed at any stage. We're pretty flexible in terms of flipping from a 3 to a 4 at the back, which frees up certain personnel, gets extra bodies in different places on the football pitch. And a lot of different players so far have contributed. Rightly so, MJ will get the headlines and Sam Nombe will get the headlines. But there's a lot of contributions elsewhere on the pitch which can't go underestimated.
You mentioned that tactical flexibility there. Is that something that you feel like you're developing as you go on as a manager?
Not really. I mean, we've always used it at Exeter, and it probably goes before my time in terms of Paul Tisdale, who was almost famous for his tactical knowledge and his ability to change a game at different stages, even early on in games, flipping from a back three to a back four and changing formation to affect the opposition and to strengthen the team. So it's almost been in our upbringing as a club. And almost being in these academy players especially, it's a natural thing for them to do. And it doesn't feel strange when it does happen. So keeping the players feeling comfortable at any stage during a game is absolutely vital to our recent form. But it's a strong aspect to our play because it means if we need to find different openings or different space on the pitch, then we can change in an instant. And probably with the same person on the pitch as well. So the fact that we can do that is a real strong aspect because in all of these games and throughout this run, we've never been too far ahead and we've never been too far behind. And it's been such fine margins, which is important to say that it could easily go either way. We might have a run where we struggle for a little while because this league is so, so competitive.
We were talking about your current strikers, Ollie Watkins, somebody who's still kind of having an effect, I think, at the club because of the really clever way that you structured that transfer. It means there's been a couple of payouts as he's progressed in his career. Has that been a big benefit to you? Or do you feel when you go looking for a player that clubs maybe ramp up the prices because they think that you've got that windfall?
It's an interesting point. Look, I can't take too much credit for the Ollie Watkins situation and his departure to Brentford at the time. Obviously, Paul Tisdale was manager. I was on the coaching staff, but Paul and Stevie Perryman produced a fantastic deal for the football club, financially beneficial at the time when he moved to Brentford. And then obviously the big sell on when he went to the Premier League with Aston Villa and international appearances on top of that. So similar to what you mentioned, he's produced so much money for his football club and that testament must go to Paul and Stephen and Julian Tagg in relation to the deal which was done back then. And that's allowed us to progress as a football club. The investment from Ollie Watkins and other players who we've sold has gone back into the club. We're due to get a new training ground or new training ground building next season, which we're really, really looking forward to and we really need. But the point about does it affect how people view us as a football club? It probably works both ways because I think it means that our players are more financially feasible in terms of or more financially able to be sold at a higher price based on our reputation than maybe actual the product on the pitch at times, simply due to that reputation of producing good young players who've gone on to achieve great things in the past and will continue to do so. But it also does put the market at a difficult position because it means we can only attract a certain type of players and a player who's ready for an opportunity who's maybe not had it elsewhere. So we very rarely get the finished article and the hardened ones who generally the ones who get you promoted and get you success on the weekend. Sam Nombe is a prime example of that. wasn't getting game time at MK, had the opportunities of loan movers elsewhere, but he was a player we wanted to invest in as long as he invested in ourselves. And I'm sure what happens in the future with the likes of Sam and MJ and other academy products and other young players at the club will be a reflection on us as a development club, but hopefully we can go get a little bit of success alongside that.
You're back in league action this weekend, Carlisle at St James's Park. Obviously, very contrasting form between the pair of you, which on paper makes you think, well, you'd be confident of getting the points. I just wonder how difficult it is, though, to prepare for a game like that against a team with a relatively new manager. So, you know, not necessarily a set way of playing yet.
Well, exactly that. A new manager, I think he's probably three, possibly four games into his tenure there. So they'll be working out new ideas and new philosophies and new styles and new patterns of play. And we're obviously on the back of the 120 minutes last night. You can't look too much into the form guide in League Two. We had it with Oldham last weekend, who provided a real stern test. And we were fortunate to come through that, you know, with the scoreline that we did. So it's that sort of league where anyone beats anyone. And on the day, there's a lot of good players in each and every squad and setup. So we won't take that, this one lightly. But it might have helped our situation, the fact that we won't be able to do too much training going into the game. It will just be a case of picking the freshest bunch we've got on the back of last night, see who's physically and mentally in the right position to go and put out a huge effort again. And it'll be another scrap, it'll be another war, a battle for a certain amount of time. And hopefully a bit of quality will show through at a certain stage.
Well, wouldn't you just know it, as soon as we finished recording, it was announced that Exeter aren't being thrown out the FA Cup. They're not being allowed to progress to round two and face Cambridge. Instead, they're going to have to replay the game against Bradford that they won 3-0 in midweek. Michelle, this strikes me as a rather unsatisfactory result for everybody, Bradford included.
Oh, so Bradford have got to go all the way back down to Exeter to replay a game which they lost handsomely in the end, although it was close to extra time. And it's just another fixture to add to an already congested fixture list. I mean, they said after considering all their options, the result shouldn't stand and this is the appropriate action. But I don't know. I mean, I reckon just give Bradford three goals in the game, which makes it 3-3. They meet on a neutral ground and have a quick penalty shootout to decide it. That's what I would have done.
Villa Park, just because that was always the home for the go-to neutral ground. Who do you think is going to be more annoyed about this out of Matt Taylor and Derek Adams?
Derek Adams, because it's quite a long way, Bradford to Exeter, and it's just another one to fit in. I mean, it's a nice chance to play again and potentially get that nice big draw in future, but it's just something else to do, isn't it, during the season? It's unnecessary, all because someone didn't get their sums right. I mean, Bradford to Exeter, hold on, let me put it in Google Maps. How far is it? It is 4 hours and 45 minutes. I mean, the Bradford fans, who's going to do that again?
On a Tuesday night.
On a Tuesday, a cold Tuesday evening in November. I don't think it's ideal for anyone, but I think Exeter have got the better draw there for sure.
I'm struggling to wonder who to pin most blame on for this FA Cup mix-up, because obviously a team should know how many substitutions they've made, but shouldn't the fourth official know that too? And is it up to him? Maybe he knew and just thought, well, this isn't my job to tell you that you've already used your five subs.
Well, why is the fourth official there then? No, what's the point?
To be shouted at? Yeah. Other than that, not much.
But it's also, right, if you're the sixth sub coming on, you know there's been five subs, right? Because if I'm a player, I'm sat there thinking, I'm not coming on tonight. I'll put my coat back on. I'll take my shin pads off, put my trainers on, whatever you do on the bench. But that player would have known, surely, that they were the sixth sub. Like, that's what blows my mind. I'm sure Clarkey will say, like, when he was a professional footballer, on the rare occasion he was on the bench, when the three subs were up, he knew he could go and grab a cup of tea. Like, that is what gets me about this so much. That player must have known that the subs were all gone. But, yeah, I mean, look, five subs, okay, maybe it's not that easy to keep a track of as just three, but quite incredible. It was such a thrashing of Bradford for them as well. And, you know, without that sub, they probably would have still won the game, wouldn't they? So, just madness. And when things like this happen in professional football, it blows my tiny mind.
They did, in fairness, they did score the goals in extra time. So maybe it did make
it. Yeah, fresh legs, I know, because it was 100 minutes and 115 for the goals, wasn't it? But
yeah. It's another reason to get rid of five subs. It's not going to be eradicated. They're bringing it in, aren't they, universally, I think, moving forward. So I just don't like it. It's too easy to lose count. But no, on this, I genuinely think it should be the responsibility of the officials, and that they're the ones that should be punished, not Exeter City.
Well, that is the decision. One thing's for certain, we will see a different fourth official that night, one would assume. All right, we'll look ahead to the standout fixtures in the EFL next.
Because you're a listener of the Totally Football League Show, you can get a third off an Athletic subscription right now. All you need to do is head to theathletic.com/league show.
The weekend of the Championship gets underway in West London on Friday night, where QPR hosts Luton Town in the Sam Park in Derby. We're going to focus on the game between Middlesbrough and Millwall at the Riverside, though. This is the first game as Borough boss for Chris Wilder. Adrian, what do you think are some of the key elements he'll be looking to change from how they have been setting up and playing under Neil Warnock to what he's looking for? I'll give you bonus points if you don't use the phrase overlapping centre-back.
Well, you would imagine, wouldn't you, that they're going to go to a back three on a regular basis. I think they've sort of flitted, haven't they, under Neil Warnock. So yeah, that's one clear change. He likes to use the width of the pitch. The wing backs are very, very important to Chris Wilder teams, no doubt about that. Yeah, it's interesting. Pretty a front too. He likes to pair strikers, doesn't he, at the top end of the pitch. They have been doing that of late. Neil Warnock has been playing 3-5-2, so it's not that much of a departure. No, there's not that much wrong at Middlesbrough, is there, really? I don't think Neil Warnock would have been fired for poor performances. I think it's just that they saw the opportunity to make the change. So not that much needs to be done, apart from get a load of their best players fit and available again. When Middlesbrough have their full complement of players fit and available, I think it's a squad that's as strong, if not stronger, than the one that Wilder had at Sheffield United and took up to the Premier League. I don't see a lot in it. So on the basis of that, I think there's reasons for great optimism around the Riverside. They've got themselves a really good manager.
Yeah, he wants to make the Riverside an intimidating place for opponents to come. He said, it isn't going to be Galatasaray welcome to hell, but it's a fabulous stadium. I don't want anybody coming here and getting an easy win. He's set to sign Neil Taylor on a free in January. Back-to-back home games against Millwall and Preston, then away to Huddersfield. Looks like a decent first three for them. Millwall-wise, Michelle, start the weekend in ninth, only a point outside the playoffs. But they're one of those under-the-radar teams, which I feel like there's a lot of in the Championship. If you're not inside the playoff places and you're not currently facing a point deduction, then people don't talk about you too much. What do they need to do to go from playoff chasers to promotion contenders?
I think just keep doing what they're doing. They've only lost one of their last five. The story with them last season, as you know, was far, far too many draws. But, you know, they're getting far more wins this season. I think the Sheffield United win was massive for them. And they've been on a decent run before the international break. They lost to Huddersfield, which I found really surprising. But then Huddersfield have been doing pretty well of late as well. But it's so congested, as always, I think, at this time of the season. It's so congested in that middle pack. And themselves and up to sort of Blackburn are leading the way to get into those playoff places. You know, they get 3 points at the weekend and other results go their way. They're in there and we're talking about them next week being in the top six. So they're not doing anything wrong, really. I think Gary Rowett's doing a fantastic job there. They keep it quite tight at the back. I think they've been flitting between a 3 and a 4 at the back from what I've seen. That's it. That's my instruction to Millwall. More of the same. They don't score that many goals is the only thing I'd say, like looking at their results. You know, they're never ones to go and smash 3 or 4 in regularly. And when you look at the likes of sort of free-flowing football that Bournemouth and Fulham play at times, they're a little way off that, obviously. But to be in the playoffs, you don't necessarily need to do that, do you, Clarkie?
You don't, no. But I'm just flipping this round to the Middlesbrough angle again. If Middlesbrough were to overcome Millwall, who are a solid team, top half team, it would be the first top half team they've beaten this season. So that is the next challenge, isn't it, for Chris Wilder to make them more competitive against the division's best. So, yeah, even though Millwall probably aren't regarded as huge promotion favourites or anything, they are one of the better teams in the division. And I think if Wilder can win this, it might just give that squad a bit more sort of belief in themselves moving forwards. Their only wins have come against struggling sides so far.
They've got a good record in this fixture. You've got to go back to 2014 for the last time Millwall won at the Riverside. Right, let's move on to Berkshire, where Reading and the two-time European champions Nottingham Forest will meet. There's plenty to talk about Reading-wise here. As we mentioned, they've been hit with a six-point deduction for breaching financial rules, a further 6 points suspended until next season. They were 4 points off the promotion places. Now they're only 4 points above the bottom three. Michelle, if you're a Reading player, we spoke about the Derby players and Clarkie saying, well, there'll be a sort of general acceptance of this because their fate is pretty much sealed. It's got to be, in a way, much more annoying for the Reading players because they were looking up the table at the playoff places and that's gone now, surely.
Yeah, but we knew this was coming. It's been mooted for a couple of months, hasn't it? So, unfortunately, they probably were prepared and knew it was on the horizon. I don't think the playoffs are gone for them. I mean, I'm not sure if they've got the consistency. They're just... Yeah, you never know what you're going to get with Reading. You know, they've won seven, lost nine. They've only drawn one game all season. So even at this point, you know, if you go on a run, I wouldn't say the playoffs are out of reach for them. But that said, yeah, it's not where you want to be compared to a week ago. But Andy Carroll signing was the most surprising news. That was more surprising for me than the points deduction. Because I was like, sorry, what's happened here? And I had to like go and look it up. And yeah, he signed a short-term deal. If he proves to be successful, they can extend it. But he hasn't played a competitive fixture since May. That was the last time out for Newcastle against Sheffield United in the Premier League. But he said he's been keeping himself fit, waiting for the chance. 381 minutes in the last 18 months. So I'm not quite sure what Reading are going to get. But it's intriguing and fair enough. You know, if he wants to play football, he's gone there to play football. But yeah, just wasn't expecting that. But they went into the international break on a high, didn't they? They had four defeats in a row and then they beat Birmingham. So maybe they can take some positivity from that and signing a former England striker.
You know, what's more surprising than anything is that Andy Carroll hasn't retired. I mean, if there was a player that would have retired by now, it would have been Andy Carroll, right? I mean, I kind of thought he had.
They can't get him fit, Clarkie, can they? Between now and January, as Michelle said, he's played fewer than 400 minutes over 18 months. He's not going to be ready to play in the Championship for the next 6 weeks, is he?
No, he can get fit faster than that. No, he'll be okay.
Andy Carroll?
Well, whether you can keep him off the treatment table, yeah. Because one of the things about getting fit is that you have to work really hard and put your body under a bit of strain to get fit. And when that happens to Andy, bless him, things tend to go wrong, don't they? So, yeah, look, it'd be really interesting. It gives them a whole new dynamic if he can get fit and available. Because in the absence of Lucas Joao, Mate as well, they are really light, aren't they, up top. And a bit like Mitrovic. I mean, if he is in good nick, Andy Carroll, he wouldn't be the kind of striker Championship defences fancy playing, would he?
I don't know. Do you think he's comparable to Mitrovic? I don't know. I thought Mitrovic...
Not in the here and now.
Well, maybe... Yeah, but, I'm going to eat my words, aren't I? In 6 months, Andy Carroll's the top scorer. He surpassed Mitrovic.
No. That's not going to happen. But when you put the ball in the box, defenders are a bit scared of Mitrovic. Honestly, Andy Carroll is quite fearsome, I think, centre forward to handle because he's so strong, so big. And yeah, I wouldn't mock the signing, but it's definitely a risky one.
It's an interesting one.
I was feeling really confident, Adrian, with my Forest hat on coming into this game until the points deduction. And then I thought, oh, well, Reading are bound to win it now, aren't they? They'll do what Derby did against Stoke. But looking all right now, Forest unbeaten in three since they got walloped by Fulham. That the only blot on the Steve Cooper copybook. And at this point, it's got to be more than new manager bounds.
Yeah, good response, hasn't it, to that defeat. You're a really good away team, I think, Nottingham Forest. Unbeaten in the last six on the road. You sort of look well built for road trips, don't you, in terms of soaking up the pressure and then breaking hard and fast. Forest players seem to really embrace that style. What was interesting with the Preston win was obviously the switch to the back four from playing with wing-backs. They went to 4-2-3-1, got Maiten, Zinkanago and Johnson in the team together behind Graben. I think that was to get another attacking player on the pitch because they really fancied their chances of beating Preston. So will that be the case moving forwards in a match that they really want smell blood in? Will they go with the back four and be a bit, yeah, play with the back three against the stronger teams? And if so, where do you put Reading in the grand scheme of things this weekend? So yeah, I'm just interested to see what formation Cooper goes with. But in general, I think it's a really good idea to be able to flip between the two seamlessly, and last time out shows that they kind of can do that.
Yeah, whatever formation he's playing, he's getting a tune out of Lewis Grabban. 6 goals in his last 8 championship outings. Incredible what a player can do when you actually play the ball to him rather than just watch him wandering forlornly around the pitch trying to get a kick. Head-to-head wise, Reading unbeaten in the last 5 meetings home and away. Forest last win as the away side in the fixture. I was there this day. 2015. I had a look at it. It was so long ago. We had Mikel Antonio playing up front. Those were the days.
Whatever happened to him?
Yeah. Weird that he doesn't celebrate on international duty, by the way, Mikel Antonio. Do you see that? He scored for Jamaica and just kind of walked back to the halfway line. I'm like, is there no cardboard cutout? Is there no Matrix-style thing here? Disappointing. Anyway, Abby, can you give us some odds, please, on those championship games that we've just spoken about with Paddy Power?
Yeah, absolutely. Slightly raspy odds today, so hope you can bear with that. We'll start at the Majeski Stadium, or whatever it's actually called now. Reading are the narrow favourites in this game against Forest. They're 2-1, Forest 11-8, and the draw 21-10 there. Up at the Riverside, it's Middlesbrough who are the favourites here, 11-10, Millwall 13-5, with the draw coming out at a nice 21-10.
Thanks, Abby. We'll take a look at a couple of other weekend games that tickled our fancy next. Now then, in League One, if you like clubs with big reputations currently toiling in the division, then have I got the fixture for you. It's called Sunderland versus Ipswich Town. It goes down at the Stadium of Light this very weekend. Sunderland 2 places and 4 points better off than Ipswich ahead of kickoff. But in terms of being in a good moment, as we like to say, Michelle, they are certainly not.
No, I mean, they're coming up against Ipswich, who are 9th, but 1 loss in the last 10 games in all competitions. They're going to Sunderland, who are 7th. You look at the table and not the form, you'd be thinking, oh, well, Sunderland are the favourites, but Sunderland haven't won in 6 matches. I feel for Lee Johnson because he is known, or was known at times at Bristol City, as Streaky Lee, because at times, Bristol City went on these runs and they just could not get out of them. They couldn't find a win for love nor money. So, I don't know. It seems to be something that's starting to follow him around a little bit. Sunderland fans would probably be able to tell us more on their opinion and their feelings on it. But I know that he is forensic. Maybe, you know, so specific about things. And we talked about it before. So specific. And his mind will not be switching off from what is going on at the moment. He probably wouldn't mind us saying that he's obsessed. So whatever is happening and going wrong at Sunderland at the moment, he's leaving no stone unturned to try and get it right. But I know Sunderland aren't where they were hoping and where they'd expect to be.
On the plus side, injuries seem to be clearing up a little bit for them. Ross Stewart, Alex Pritchard might be available for this, though Aidan McGeady is set to miss out. Ipswich, Clarkie, the turnaround from the start of the season to now has been more dramatic than the change in Paul Cook's voice from the start of a post-match interview to the end of it.
Yeah, look, they're ahead of, across the last 10 games, Ipswich are better than Sunderland. They've accrued more points and they're the 5th best team across the last 10 games. So that shows that it's been a steady sort of incline that they've gone up. Definitely making less mistakes. We talked when they were having a bad time. I think I remember getting some stats out of the old suitcase and wheeling them out about how the metrics were so strong for them in attack and in defence, and that sooner or later it will balance out. And I think that's kind of what's happened. They've stopped conceding really silly goals, stopped making mistakes, and yeah, the forwards have begun to gel, which was to be expected, I guess. So, headed in the right direction, Ipswich. Clearly, they're going to have bumps in the road. They're not perfect, but they might smell blood here. I think that for Sunderland, it was a good time to have the international break because they were shocking, weren't they, in the 3-0 loss at Sheffield Wednesday. I mean, no one lets in 3 against Sheffield Wednesday, do they? That was a really unexpected result. So Ipswich will go there smelling blood, but Yeah, I think it'll be a tight game. I really do. 0-0 obviously last weekend when I said there'd be goals and you said historically there are no goals when it's Ipswich Oxford. That's how it turned out. I can see another low scoring game here potentially. One player I would want to pick out though for Ipswich that's been really good lately, and that's the centre back George Edmondson, former Rangers player of course under Gerard Oldham before that. Yeah, he's really settled into it, and yeah, his battle with Ross Stewart, I think, will maybe be the defining duel of the game. Whoever comes out on top in that particular 50-50 might end up on the winning team.
Before we move on from League One, over on our new podcast, In the Boardroom, Jackie Oatley's been speaking with Ashley Brown, the chairman of the Portsmouth Supporters Trust, about how they saved the club from going bust. Here's a taste of that.
How close did Pompey come to going out of business completely?
Hours on a number of occasions. I think the one point that was closest is Trevor Birch, the administrator, gave us a call and said, right now, I don't have enough money to fulfill certain commitments. And if you want this administration to continue, you're going to have to help fund it. And some of the wealthier Pompey fans that had chipped in, at that point in time, those guys dug into their pockets and pulled together a certain amount of money that Trevor said he needed to continue the administration. And that kept Pompey alive. If they hadn't have done that, the club would have disappeared. And to be fair to those guys, they did that with no expectation of ever getting the money back. The best they had was that if we were successful to take over, then that money would be converted to equity for them. And if it wasn't for that, the club would have disappeared. I mean, say disappeared, we already had a plan B. We had a whole team of people looking at Phoenix Pompey should the worst case scenario happen. So Pompey would have survived, but we'd have probably started again at the bottom of the football pyramid and we'd be fighting our way back up.
Does your heart miss a beat when you think about that?
I really can't imagine life without Pompey. I mean, I've not known anything else other than sort of supporting Pompey and go and watch the team on a Saturday, even if I don't make every single game these days. It's a huge part of my life. And it's not just me, it's a huge part of lots of people's lives. And you saw that at Bury recently and Macclesfield, where clubs have disappeared, and at Bury they've had to start again, at Macclesfield they've had to start again. That getting torn from people's lives, you know, people were left in tatters and people in emotional distress. I can't imagine what that must be like. I got close to having to imagine it, but luckily I haven't had to go through it like some of the guys at Bury and Macclesfield and others have.
To hear the whole interview, search for In the Boardroom, available in all good pod shops and ad-free on the Athletic app. Right, on Monday's pod, we spoke to Newport boss James Robey. Go back and have a listen if you missed it. Robey and the Exiles welcome Swindon to Rodney Parade on Saturday. Only goal difference separates the two in the playoff places ahead of kickoff. League-wise, County unbeaten in seven. They've won their last three. It was interesting, Michelle, when we spoke to Robey on Monday and we were talking about managerial jobs, he mentioned the Cardiff one as well. He's clearly not short of ambition. He did say that Newport haven't set a target of promotion, but given the start he's had, it's difficult to argue that that'll be their aim from now on.
Yeah, it was interesting listening to him talk about his role at Cardiff and how he transitioned to being in charge of Newport. It seems that that's been quite seamless for him because, you know, he's got such an association with the club, as we heard, and how he knows so many faces. You know, it's just, I guess when you're transitioning into a job like that and you see people around that you know, it must be really reassuring and comforting. You feel at home straight away. And he loves the club, you can tell. And yeah, three wins in a row. They've been fantastic since he's taken over. And, you know, they weren't doing badly under Mike Flynn. And let's not forget, they don't have the biggest budget in the league. But yeah, super impressed with them since he's come in. 26 points from 16 games so far is a fantastic return. And even though Swindon Town have the game in hand this weekend, I think by now, like in November, we can start talking about six-pointers because you might be looking at games like this at the end of the season and say, oh, they're the ones you look back on. They say they don't look back on them, but I'm convinced, Adrian, that teams do, because at this moment in time, this is key, and the shift of momentum for either team to get the 3 points is huge. But big credit to James Robey. In his early days, he's getting a tune out of his team, and by the sounds of it, reading local media, the performances have been there as well. I mean, to go to Hartlepool and get that away win on a Friday night, a cold Friday night in November, I thought was super impressive. Dom Telford in the 93rd minute, you know, they're all going to be buzzing from that. But let's not forget in the Papa John's a few weeks ago, Swindon did get the better of Newport, but probably much changed teams for this weekend, I'd imagine.
The big news out of Rodney Parade ahead of this one is that Newport will be selling pints of Guinness for £3.50 between 12:30 and 2 o'clock on Saturday. If, like me, you recently paid £7.10 for a pint in London, you will appreciate the value on offer there.
I mean, what a sad state of affairs where we're celebrating.
I know, £3.50 is not even that cheap, is it?
£1.90 for a pint of Foster's. No, £1.70 for a pint of Foster's when I was in uni. £1.70 in the student bar.
I used to work at a night in a bar when I was at uni called Pounded, where any drink was a pound. And yeah, that was pretty irresponsible looking back on it. Here's something about Swindon I wasn't expecting to say. Gareth Barry has been charged by the FA over alleged breaches of intermediary regulations. The FA said further to the existing proceedings, the FA has also charged Gareth Barry in relation to breaches of the FA's regulations on working with intermediaries. It's alleged that this is to do with him and the former ownership of Swindon Town. Lee Power has also been charged with this. More on it as it develops. On the pitch, though, Adrian, things developing quite nicely for Ben Garner and his Robins. 1-6 on the spin away from home in all comps, yet to lose on their travels this season. This ought to be a really interesting game then.
Definitely, yeah. Two really bright young coaches. I'm glad you didn't ask me about Gareth Barry's situation. you've got to tread carefully there. But yeah, in the league alone, best away record, 6 wins, 2 draws, no defeats. And they're such a curious team because Swindon have the second worst points return at home, which is bizarre when you think that they are the best passing team in the division. They knock it around so well, keep it for long periods. They've got the best open play expected goals rate of any team in League Two. So they should be much better at home. Just for whatever reason, it seems to suit them playing away from the county ground. Maybe because they've got pace. Obviously, Tyree Simpson up front. McCurdy and Payne are really good travelling with the ball at their feet. I think they're among the players in the division with the most ball carries. So maybe they're just the sort of side that are suited to maybe running into the extra space you occasionally get on the road. So, yeah, look, I think it'd be a cracking game. Both managers are always changing the system and the shape as well. 1 week it's a back four, 1 week it's a back three. Ben Garner's been very much like that of late. So we don't know what we're going to get tactically. It could turn into a bit of a chess match. Could turn out to be a really sort of aesthetically pleasing League Two encounter. But yeah, one thing I do know, if Newport County win this game, that will be that crossroads moment that Michelle was hinting at there. They'll think, well, if we can beat the team's best away side at home, we must be decent. And they'll be looking at maybe automatic promotion and not just the playoffs, Newport County.
So it looks like a close game. Abby, what are Paddy Power saying about the odds in that and some League One stuff, please?
We'll start in League Two, as that's what we've just been talking about. And Newport are actually the favourites in this one, so that crossroads moment could happen. I've just got Blazing Squad in my head. Just me? Yeah, sure. Newport are 13-10 to go through that one, with Swindon 2-1. The draw 21-10, heading back up to League One and over to the Stadium of Light. It is Sunderland who are the favourites in that one. Very similar odds. They, in fact, the exact same odds. They are. You'd think I'd planned this. It's 13-10 for Sunderland to win, 2-1 for Ipswich to win, and 23-10 for that draw.
Thanks, Abby. You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. T's and C's apply. And when the fun stops, stop. All right, before we go, listener, I know you're all over the Matlock Town FC Twitter page, so you'll have seen their tweet on Wednesday, which read, ex-Sheffield United, Alfreton Town and Harrogate Town defender Terry Kennedy, who had his playing career cut short by injury, checking his lottery ticket and having it confirmed he's won £1 million, is a really lovely moment. Let's hear that now.
I can confirm that you have won £1 million.
Come on! Simple question to finish then. Clarkie, you've won £1 million. What are you doing with it? It's not the same as it was winning £1 million in the 70s, but it's still a reasonable sum of money.
I'd take it, definitely.
I'd take it. Do you know what?
I would take it. The The first thing that I would do is not tell anybody. I think I wouldn't be I would be keeping it secret if I won that kind of money on the lottery. I'd obviously be tempted to invest in Sam's social media company for footballers. That would be a temptation. I was working it out. You could even have a £10 acca. You could spend it on a £10 acca that would last you every weekend for 1,920 years, which I thought was quite interesting.
That would give us time to win one of our accas in that period as well, wouldn't it?
Probably not.
In all seriousness, I never know what to buy. I'd never want anything. I'm one of those people. I definitely spend it on sort of four good holidays a year. That'd be awesome. But from a sort of silly EFL perspective, I was thinking about what I would do. Do you know what I'd do? I would buy my way in to Ipswich Town. That's what I would do. Like, I would sort of pay someone off, or like, I don't know. I would sort Cookie out to step aside, or just pay Ipswich to get me in, because I think they're in for a great journey under the current leadership. Yeah, buy my way into being Cookie's assistant, something like that.
All right, we'll have a word with Ed Sheeran and see what he can do.
That's it, we'll tap him up.
Michelle, what are you doing with a million big ones?
Buying a house, because it's really, really boring. But we're trying to move at the moment. We've been at it for like 5 months and we've lost two houses we love. So we could keep the house we have now and buy another one and have a load of money left over. With that money left over, I would find a way of levitating home after evening games, because the state of the roads in the evening, oh, I sound old, but the state of the roads in the evening, we all know it, travelling back from a game, they closed the M4 after the Wales game on Tuesday evening, and instead of taking 50 minutes to get home, it took over 2 hours. So maybe with £1 million, I could buy my way in into the roads agency, or whatever they're called, and ban road closures at night. There you go. Changed my mind 3 times there.
Hey, what using financial clout to lobby for rule changes that might be convenient to you? That doesn't happen, does it?
Please welcome the new Secretary of State for Education, Michelle Owen. quite easy for me. I'm taking my £1 million out in unmarked £50 notes. I'm putting them in a suitcase. I'm driving up to Middlesbrough and I'm saying to Chris Wilder, you take these. Forrest can keep Jed Spence and we'll call it quits. How about that? Pretty simple, I think. Anyway, I'm sure there'll be a story on lucky old Terry Kennedy on The Athletic at some point, given that that's very, very Athletic on brand content. That'll do us for today then. Many thanks to Michelle and to Adrian and to Abby and to Frida for joining us earlier, and to Matt Taylor. Sorry, that was not the totally cursed that struck you, Matt. It is just one of those things that happened. We'll be back on Monday to pick through the best of the EFL action from the weekend. Do join us then if you can. Until then, have a great weekend. Bye for now.
You've been listening to the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and keep up to date with everything Totally by heading to @TheTotallyShow on Twitter and on Insta. Find out the latest subscription offers by going to theathletic.com/leagueshow. The Totally Football League Show is an Athletic Media Company production.
The Athletic.